So hello, everybody. We're still waiting for co-chairs, though. Is that correct?
Yeah, I was going to say, I was looking back on the email from today to see who confirmed.
Tatiana will be coming a little late. We didn't get confirmation from Dwayne yet. So Nicolia, we may have to look, or perhaps if you could do some honors of chairing this, or Peter, or Jorge.
Sure. All right. Do we want to get started, or we want to wait a couple more minutes?
Let's wait a couple more minutes. Just hopefully we get a quorum.
Okay. Sounds good.
Two more.
Colia, I'm going to email you the member roster.
You must have read my mind. I was like, wait, where's the fool?
Just sent it.
So, Pecolia?
Yep.
So, once we start and you do the, roll call and so forth, we will just try to buy a little time and do some brief, introductions and then an announcement or two.
Okay.
Okay.
So I'll call us at 6:10. So we'll give it a little 45 more seconds. Maybe.
Alrighty, I'm going to get us started. Welcome everyone to the Oakland Fund for Children and Youth special meeting of the Planning and Oversight Committee on December 1st. I am going to go through the roll call of committee members. When you hear your name, please respond with your district, starting with Bill Riley. Kimberly Acevas. Shamel Wakia. Peter Lay.
Hi, everyone. This is Peter Lay, District 2.
Thank you. Dwayne Davis. Anna Carita Allen. Pecolia Manico, President, District 4, Adult, Jorge Velasco.
Good evening, everyone. Jorge Velasco, District 5 Rep, present.
Thank you. And Tassian Kwamele Lee. All right. Let us go ahead and have staff as well as our presenters do introductions of themselves as well.
I'll start Sandra Taylor. I'm the manager for the Human Services Department and Children Youth Service Division and director of Oakland Fund for Children and Youth.
I'm Mike Wetzel. I'm the program planner at OFCY.
Scott Kim, program analyst with OFCY.
Awesome. And I think we have, go ahead.
Caitlin Forgash, administrative assistant, OFCY.
Thank you. And I think we have a couple of guests presenting today. Go ahead.
Mika Clark with Social Policy Research Associates. We're the external evaluator for OFCY.
And I'm Heather Lewis Sharp, also with Social Policy Research Associates.
Great. Thank you all for your introductions. Are there any announcements before we dive into our agenda?
Yes, I'd like to make an announcement. I just want to, one, really appreciate the members of the commission for their support and their work this past year in supporting getting the strategic plan into development and in working with their council members and staff to make sure that the council members were aware of the content and the work the commission had put in, and to, you know, just briefly say that that process is moving forward. There was a very, positive life enrichment committee hearing on November 15th, and the item moved so that the approval of the strategic plan is coming up. It's scheduled for December 7th from 1 to 1:30 at a special meeting of the life enrichment, of the city council. And then there will be a full meeting. So it's on the consent calendar. So thank you for that. And I want to add that this will be my last meeting. I am transitioning away from the city of Oakland, and I just want to say how much I've appreciated working with this commission as well as through the years with the Oversight Committee for Oakland Fund, and how great an experience it's been to have been able to just support the work that Oakland Fund for Children and Youth does with the leadership that comes from community representation, but also with the sort of amazing network of community-based organizations that see this fund as a resource that's foundational for supporting outcomes for children and youth in Oakland from an equity standpoint. So I really appreciated that. Our staff, we've been talking about that in the transition that's going to happen in the Human Services Department. And want to let you know two things. One is that there will be a recruitment for my replacement. So for the position, technically it's the Human Services Manager of the Children Youth Services Division, or the Division Manager for Children Youth Services, so to speak. It's also the person who's the lead for Oakland Fund for Children and Youth. And I think that that's going to be quickly coming. It's supposed to be released fairly soon. And, we will send it definitely out to this commission and hope that you might spread the word in terms of interested candidates for the position. And also that there will be an acting manager in the meantime, and that will be Mike Wetzel. So he will be acting on behalf of for the department, for the division, and for OFCY. And so his experience is amazing over the last 10 years in both running the Oakland Fund for Children and Youth review process, planning process, and in working really closely with the, overall grants management operation that is the real heart of OFCY in terms of the community grants. And so he will be taking on a sort of larger role, but he's also very experienced with various elements of other programs in the division. And as this is like a really critical year, I know that it will be, I have complete faith that this will be a really exciting, healthy, productive year. So it's going to be a good year. Of course, I am, you know, have very, very little anxiety, but because I'm leaving. But on the other hand, this is always a really exciting time, a fabulous sort of engagement with the community. And people are anxiously looking forward to this next release of the request for proposal process. And I also want to say SPR has been great, really working with the evaluation team these last few cycles. And we know that there's a lot of work to be done. It's a new world in terms of where the city council is going. And they heard much of, you know, everything that was in the strategic plan, and we're extremely appreciative of that. So I think it's going to be a great year. Again, I can't see Mike or any faces, but I just want to hand it over to him for the remainder of this meeting. It's, you know, all these items are things he's been working on, and we'll be successful in the coming months. So I want to thank you guys for being a really great group of people to work with, even in Zoom. So it's kind of my announcement.
Thank you so much for sharing, and appreciate all of your work and your years of service on behalf of the children and youth of Oakland.
Thank you.
You're welcome. PETA's giving you a heart.
Okay.
Lots of love. Any other announcements or reactions from the staff team or commissioners? Okay. So I'm going to just quickly review the agenda for us. We'll be going into open forum, and that's the opportunity for the public to comment on anything you want to bring to the attention of the PLC. We'll then go into adoption of the OFCY continue resolution 1 regarding continuing to conduct PLC meetings via teleconference due to COVID-19 public health emergency. We'll then move to approval of the prior meeting minutes from October 27th. We'll have a presentation and approval of the OFCY independent 2020-2021 evaluation, and that'll be presented by Mike and SPR. And then we'll do an update on the development and the release of the request for proposals. We'll round out with any administrative matters, any general announcements or upcoming meetings, and we'll adjourn. That is our agenda for tonight. You know, just a little bit of stuff. Not much. So I'll go ahead, Mike.
I just say one thing. Since we don't have a quorum at this time, we can't take action on the items. So we won't be able to take action on number 3, 4, and 5. But I would look that the social policy research would still be able to provide you with an update and do the presentation for you as an informational update.
Okay. So let's fingers crossed that we'll get one more or maybe two more members to join, and we'll keep it pushing. But for now, let's go ahead and open up open forum. So if any members of the public would like to speak, please raise your hand, which is a button at the bottom of your screen that says raise hand, and we will give you time to speak. Okay, I'm not seeing any public members of the public raising their hands, so I'm not, I'll give folks a couple more seconds to think about if they have anything they want to say. Otherwise, then I just have a question for staff with regards to item number 3. How do we proceed forward? Or are we good to not take action on it?
Well, this is new territory for us too. But what, as we read it, the resolution allows us to have a public meeting and have action. Since we don't have a quorum on this one, the issue is moot. We will having this meeting is more of an informational session since we don't have a full quorum to take action. So okay. We would just move past this item as okay. Well as moving
as past number 4, right?
Yeah.
All right. So folks understand we're going to go ahead and skip item 3, skip item 4. We don't have quorum. So we're going to go ahead and pass it to you, Mike, to introduce SBR.
Great. So one of the main projects of Oakland Fund for Children and Youth and the Planning Oversight Committee is the oversight of the annual independent evaluation. OFCY contracts with an independent evaluation firm, Social Policy Research Associates. They are Oakland based and have worked with OFCY for the last two plus funding cycles on the independent annual evaluation programs. It's critical what they provide is information on the fund level, at the strategy level, and at the program level. And I just want to emphasize that the report is in 3 parts, that if you're looking to find information on the effectiveness and the impact of Oakland Fund for Children and Youth as a whole, there's the section A that describes that. If people are looking for more information on the strategies and the effectiveness of the funding strategies, they have provided 9 specific reports on each of the funding strategies. To really look at the impact as a funding strategy, if they've been able to move the needle on citywide goals. And then if people are interested in the individual programs, the program profiles are available to really dig into each program of who they served and what they're able to accomplish with the funding. It's a really, I'd say it's a very comprehensive evaluation that they provide, surveying over 4,000 to 5,000 children and youth, parents, educators, principals. It also relies very heavily on Oakland Fund for Children and Youth, the CitySpan database, and the work that the 149 programs do each year, every quarter, to track their enrollment and participation of children and youth 0 to 21 parents. And they are able to use that quantitative data to show impact from participation, enrollment, hours of service, and also provide information on demographics and location of services and where individuals reside. With that, I know I'm taking some of your thunder, Mika, but I'm going to pass it to you to really lead this off. And I just recommend for the POC members, if you have questions throughout this, to raise your hand and allow Mika to try to address it as it goes along. And I'll pass it back to Mika.
Thanks for that introduction, Mike. Can I just get a confirmation that everyone can see the slides?
Yep.
I see it.
All right, awesome. Well, thanks for having us here again. For those of you who aren't familiar, Heather and I were Social Policy Research Associates. As Mike said, we've been working with OFCY over a couple grant cycles. It's been about 7 years. And we're really excited to be able to present the results from the 2020-2021 evaluation. If you have any questions while I'm talking, please feel free to chime in. You can either put something in the chat or you can just speak up. This is just a review of what Mike was just talking about, how we have the 3 different sections of the report so that you can look at different levels if you want the overall fund, if you want to look at one of the individual strategies or drill down to the program. I'll just move on. So I think Mike did a good overview of that. We just wanted to give you a brief overview of the data that we used to inform this report. So we had administrative records. So programs track the demographics and also the daily attendance for all of their participants. So we were able to look at attendance records and demographics for 17,502 participants in OFCY's client management system. And then we also administered a lot of surveys last year. So 5,147 youth completed a survey, along with 690 parents and caregivers who attend the early childhood programming, and 101 educators who participate in the health consultation programs at an early childhood site in Oakland. And these surveys provided participants and stakeholders an opportunity to share their perspectives on both program quality and then also their outcomes that they've achieved as a result of participating in the program. We also had staff from 131 programs complete an online survey to tell us more about characteristics, staffing, partnerships, professional development that they provide to their staff, among some other details. And then we also had the opportunity to interview program managers and directors from 11 of the funded programs. And we held focus groups with youth and adult participants from 5 programs. So every year we talk to a sample of programs and our goal is to be able to reach every program over the 3-year cycle. So everyone will have an opportunity to participate in an interview or a focus group. Okay, so diving into the report, on page 3, we have an overview of the funded strategies. This grant cycle, there were 9 separate strategies that fall under the areas of early childhood, student success, positive youth development, or transitions to adulthood. And now I want to focus on the children, youth, and families who were served by OFCY and its funded programs. You can find this information on page 6 of our report. So we're really pleased to note that over 15,000 children and youth participated in funded programs. And in light of OFCY's commitment to racial equity, we saw that OFCY programs are serving OFCY's target population of children and youth who identify as African American or Black, Latinx, and Asian Pacific Islander. We want to note that this number, the 15,000 youth, doesn't include preschoolers who attended child development centers and Head Starts that benefit from the support of mental health consultants, because that attendance isn't entered into contract management system. And programs in the parent engagement and support strategy and the family resource center strategy also served over 2,000 parents and caregivers. And in the strategy level reports, you can find this information for each strategy as well. So we compared the demographics of the city of Oakland to OFCY enrollment, and we found that OFCY programs served about 20% of Oakland's Black and Latinx children and youth, and about 14% of Asian and Pacific Islander youth. Well, we wanted to look a little bit more closely at race and ethnicity across different groups, because we know that the demographics changes if you look at different age groups in Oakland. And we found that participation rates varied across age and race. So in this chart, the more vibrantly pink shades represent a higher proportion of children and youth being served. So as shown, Latinx children were more represented among the children 0 to 12 age group than they were in youth 13 and up. In comparison, African American and Black and Asian Pacific Islander participants comprised a higher proportion of children and youth over 5 years old than they did younger children. And this largely mirrors the city demographic trends that we've been seeing over the past several years, where we're showing a growing Latinx population among younger children in the city. And our report also shows some other demographic information, including age, gender, and zip code of residence. This year, we were also able to investigate sexual orientation of participants using the youth survey. That question is only on the survey for students in middle school and up. And we found that 9% of students in grade 6 and above who submitted a survey identified as LGBTQ+. So that's came to 377 young people, and they were served across 52 programs. And this is an increase over previous years. Okay, So moving on, we wanted to provide a little summary of the framework that we use for this evaluation. So in the past couple of years, we have adopted a results-based accountability framework, which the City of Oakland also uses. And the results-based accountability framework really focuses on these three really critical questions. So how much did programs accomplish, which we answer with enrollment and attendance data? Second, how well did they do it, which we answer by looking at if programs accomplished what they had projected they would do in terms of enrollment and attendance. And also, really importantly, we look at participant feedback through surveys to assess program quality. And then finally, is anyone better off? Which we assess through self-reported outcomes from participant surveys, and also by looking at other data points like youth employment. So on page 2 in the executive summary of the report, you'll see this table of all of the RBA metrics. And these RBA metrics, just as the report itself, is broken up into those three guiding questions I just went over. And we also have these this RBA metric table for each as well in the strategy level reports. And so moving on, we're gonna turn to the first question. How much did programs do? So programs did a lot over the last fiscal year, particularly given the challenges that were posed by COVID. Still, we did see a drop in child and youth enrollment over the previous year. And through our interviews with programs and looking through the quarterly reports that they submitted, we learned that enrolling children and youth in virtual services was very challenging for a lot of programs, as many young people were experiencing Zoom fatigue, as I know many of us are. And many of the practices that they traditionally draw on were not feasible, as recruiting youth at in-person events or relying on schools, which closed last year. Still, some programs were able to enroll more students than previously because of the virtual format. They found it easier to get people to join because they didn't have to go anywhere. Parents programs also reported this a lot. It was more convenient for parents to attend. There was some difference in strategies. So summer programming, comprehensive after school, and youth development leadership strategies experienced the largest drop compared to other strategies. So we also saw that Black and Asian children and youth comprised a somewhat smaller proportion of OFCY participants this last year than they did in the previous year. But that did vary by strategy. So there was a lower proportion of Black children and youth in awareness, youth development leadership, comprehensive after school, engagement and success for elementary and middle school students, parent engagement and success. Still, Black children and youth actually made up a higher proportion of participants in the high school and post-secondary student success strategy and the summer programming strategy compared to previous years. Okay. And now we're going to move on to our second question. How much did programs accomplish last year? It's because after school programs attend differently, I just want to point out that we didn't include attendance for that strategy in the report this year. So the hours of service are only including the other strategies, not the after school strategies. But still, even excluding the comprehensive after school, programs provided over 1 million hours of enriching experiences for young people and children that they might not otherwise have access to. And on average, youth received about 100 hours of service. OFCY is designed to serve a very diverse group of children with needs and different interests. The amount of time participants were engaged in programs varied, which is by design. Programs are designed to be very intensive. Others are a little bit more light touch. But as shown here, half of participants, in other words, for 10,000 young people, spent at least 120 hours in programming. We did see that there was some variation in the amount of time that you spent in programming across race and ethnicity. Asian, Pacific Islander, multiracial and biracial, and African American and Black youth spent more time in programming than the average participant. And some of this difference that we're seeing here may be related to the ages of participants. for example, Middle Eastern and North African participants tended to participate in the early childhood programs, where average hours of service tend to be lower because they're usually weekly parent-child play groups, or they're providing resource referrals to community resources. They're just not generally not as intensive. Okay. And now, how well did programs do it? So first, we look at how close programs came to meeting their projections. So every year, programs, they project how many children, youth, and adults they're going to enroll and what they expect attendance hours to be. And then we just do a comparison to see if they're meeting what they projected to do. So as shown on here, on average, programs did meet their projected enrollment and attendance hours. And then what we believe to be one of the most meaningful parts of the evaluation, we also consider participant feedback to answer this question about how well programs did it. So we looked at a few key components of program quality that research has shown is associated with strong positive youth development outcomes in out-of-school programming. So these areas include creating a safe environment, having activities that youth find interesting and engaging, and forming connections between participants and caring adults. So our survey specifically asks questions around these areas. And as you can see on this slide, youth rated programs strongly in each of these areas overall. 92% of youth, for example, agreed that they felt safe in their program. And I also just want to note that there is a not sure option on the survey. So this doesn't necessarily mean that 8% of participants disagree that they felt safe in the program. So some of these might have marked not sure. Okay. And turning to the third and for many of us most interesting question, is anyone better off? So we worked with programs and with OFCY to provide 2 to 3 outcomes for each strategy that were the most important goals for programs. And these are outcomes that we know can set up a young person for success. The early childhood strategy is on adult level outcomes, including connections to resources, parental confidence, and knowledge of child development. And these are outcomes that we know help adults best care for the children in their charge. For the child and youth serving strategies, we have 2 to 3 outcomes for each strategy that are related to either academics, youth development, or career awareness, depending on the strategy. Now, these are the primary outcome measures that we look at for the RBA that are listed here on the slide, but the survey includes a lot of other questions tied to a number of other outcomes related to youth development and strategy-specific goals. And you can find out more about that in the strategy level reports. Okay, so before I talk more about this survey, I want to take a moment to tease out why these survey questions and the other RBA indicators are important in showing outcomes. So on the left side of this slide, we have a list of some of the city's RBA goals that are most tied to OFCY's work. Here, we have an example of some of the data points that we use to assess progress toward one of the city's goals, just as an example. Are older youth more connected to school or work? And here we see that OFCY programs placed 1,496 youth in an internship or job placement. And we also found that 86% of youth in the high school and post-secondary success programs who submitted a survey agreed that their programs helped them feel more confident about going to college. On page 7 of the report, we have some other sample data points for each of these city goals. And so this is what we're looking at to know that programs are contributing to citywide goals. And a few examples of some of these key outcomes for the year. We found that 94% of youth in career awareness and employment support programs agreed that they learned about jobs they can have in the future. And 84% of youth in the strategies with an academic focus reported that they learned skills that helped them with their schoolwork because of the program. So again, these are just very important outcomes that we know are going to set up young people for success in the future. We also want to know if youth of different ages or different identities have different experiences in programs or if they have different outcomes. So looking into that, we found that older youth reported the strongest outcomes in several youth development outcomes that we investigate. And that includes decision-making and goal setting, development and mastery of skills, confidence, and sense of belonging. And by older youth, we're talking about youth in grades 10 and above and out of school youth. We also found that African-American Black children and youth were most likely to agree that an adult at their program cared about them, and other questions on the survey that were related to positive connections to adults. We found that Asian Pacific Islander youth were most likely to agree with questions related to improved development and mastery of skills, while Latinx youth are most likely to agree with questions related to improved decision-making. And finally, as I had mentioned before, about 9% of youth in grades 6 and up who completed the survey identified as LGBTQ+ on the survey. And we found that these youth reported similarly strong outcomes and also assessments of program quality. So we're seeing that these youth are feeling just as safe, just as connected to caring adults as other youth in the programs. And again, this is spread across 52 different OFCY programs. Those were the major findings in the main report. Just want to review again that we have the OFCY main report, then we have the strategy level summaries, and then the program profiles. Going to now talk a little bit, very briefly, about one of the strategy level reports, just to give you a taste of what you can find in those sections. So we're looking at the career awareness and employment support strategy. And this shows some of the RBA metrics that we're looking at for this strategy. Also, as I mentioned before, we have the RBA table for each strategy. So you can see some of the very specific RBA indicators that we're looking at to, again, show the program quality, show how programs are contributing to positive youth outcomes. And then we also provide more detailed survey results. There's also a lot of quotes from program staff and participants that we interviewed as part of the evaluation. And finally, again, we also look at the results for each individual program, and that's in the last section of the report. We have program profiles. This is important to look for, you know, external stakeholders to look at programs, but also programs themselves use them as well so that they can focus on continuous quality improvement and get feedback from their participants. All right. And so in the program profiles, we show the demographics and attendance of participants. We also structure the program profiles, three RBA questions. How much did we do? How well did we do it? And is anyone better off? And then we also provide detailed survey results. So they get the results for each individual question on the survey. So we wanted to share some overall takeaways from the report. We really commend programs for demonstrating creativity and adaptability this last year and how they shifted to virtual enrichment or how they were able to modify internship and job placements and find ways for safe social interaction with children, youth, and families. As we already mentioned, through their surveys, youth expressed their appreciation for time to engage with their the support that they received from staff. And they also we also learned from program staff that they were able to provide more individualized services this year, which was a strong benefit for programs and for families, especially those who were needing connections to basic services. And now I'd like to open it up for questions.
I just want to mention, I was remiss in not saying this earlier, but the Social Policy Research did this presentation to the POC's evaluation subcommittee last month. Dwayne Davis, Tassian, Kwamaleli, and Pecolia were there. So Pecolia, you might have some feedback from that meeting just to share. Not to put you on the spot, but put you on the spot.
I was honestly about to look for my notes, like, what, you know, it was a little bit ago. Please don't. Please don't.
Excuse me. I'm telling you and, something.
Just give me 1 second, y'all. I am a parent, and obviously my lovely child is very curious about Zoom. I would rather want to hear if Peter or Tassian or Jorge, do you have any questions while I calm my child down?
No questions on my end.
None on my end either.
We're also interested if you have any feedback for what you'd like to see in next year's report as well.
This is Jorge, would it be possible to include feedback from program directors about some of the things that they see they can find more useful, things that they need or might have an excess of, you know, they're on site, you know, and they on the day-to-day sort of ground. So it'd be interesting to hear from their perspective as well.
So like recommendations for additional support that they could use as they serve children, youth, and families?
Yeah, additional support or if there's certain things that are in excess, potentially.
Can you tell me more about that, about what you mean by things that are in excess?
I can imagine. So I know in the Fruitvale, for example, back when, this used to be when Centro was around, but for example, if there's meals that don't get distributed, you know, if there's an excess of food, food that they receive for their programs, for their either morning, for their afternoon, if they have enough for their children, or if there's more so interested in just ensuring that there isn't a waste of goods. Particularly perishable goods, if they purchase or if they're given monies for goods, or if they're given or if they receive goods, you know, how can making sure that they're utilized rather than kind of end up in the trash bin, stuff like that. I know that there's been times where in other works that I've done at some of the public parks or some of the programs, you know, there's enough things that they have, or there could be a need for more. So just curious to see. I know if outside of COVID, you know, I would have certainly would like to have engaged with program directors to just, you know, meet them personally and get a better feel for what their needs may be.
Yeah, we're currently designing our interview questions for when we do interviews this year. So we can add that in, and we can also add program survey as well. The survey that goes to the program directors and program managers to fill out.
That'd be helpful. And then do we see those, or are those just kind of developed, and then is there any review process for those interviews, or do you guys develop the interviews and kind of just move forward with what you come up with?
Yeah, we work closely with Mike and Scott to go over interview questions and survey questions and such, but we haven't shared that with the POC in the past.
Can I just add in? I seem to recall like in past evaluations, what we do have is like recommendations based upon some of those program, you know, the program director and the staff surveys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. I'm just like to frame it, you know, around like what you actually have done, you know, has really been, it's been a while too since I've looked at that, but that's been, those have been helpful when you have, you know, that's a part of the evaluation. It's this is a really strange year, obviously, for evaluation and major differences in what was, you know, what of course the experience has been, but also in, you know, in some ways in the evaluation and in the number of, you know, young people who were reached. But I found that I don't know if there's recommendations on, you know, in this evaluation in the main report, but it's also the third, this is the evaluation of the second year, and it's, you know, a full year of the COVID piece. Yeah. So it might be a little different in terms of the information that we've had from this process.
We definitely asked for recommendations in the interviews, and then it's just a matter of what themes come out of the interviews. And this year it was a little, different. There was a lot of just gratefulness, I think, expressed when we asked for suggestions, for the flexibility that OFCY was able to provide and just the support. Mm-hmm. But there weren't, in this particular year, we didn't hear any concrete recommendations from program directors.
Thanks for responding to that question, because I think it's really helpful. When we have you all come and present to the evaluation subcommittee, I think a lot of folks were just appreciative of just the resiliency that we saw across programs and the adaptability. And overall, the evaluation subcommittee's recommendation was to accept, you know, this evaluation as very thorough. And there were a couple of questions, Mike. I'm not finding my notes fast enough, and apologies to the public, but I think there were just a couple of questions around additional data points that we might be able to get. And I that's the only thing that I could pull up off of memory, because I can't remember the specifics, but overall the PLC subcommittee on evaluation was just, you know, the information in the evaluation report is real thorough.
I think one of the recommendations was to add a slide on the data sources.
Thank you. I was like, there was something. I was like, ah, yes. Thank you. Thank you, Micah. So are there any other questions, comments, appreciations before we have staff direct us on what action we need to take on this? And I believe we can take action. If I'm correct, we have Tassian, Jorge, Peter, and myself here, which is four out of the is that quorum for us, Mike?
I don't think it's quorum because there's nine.
Yeah, you need five.
We need five. We were almost there. So close.
So what we would do with this would be to bring it back to you at the next POC meeting in January, which would be the third Wednesday. We need POC approval of it to then forward it to City Council. So the next, that'd be Wednesday, the 19th of January. And we would need quorum. Once POC approves it, we can bring it to City Council for adoption. And I really do look forward to sharing out the findings from this year to City Council. The evaluation report is really one of the best ways to show the depth and breadth of the programs and their impact. It gets complex, I think, across 149 programs, 9 strategies to talk about the impact of the fund and what social policy research has done really well this last couple of years is trying to frame it into a results-based accountability framework, just to help the public and the stakeholders at City Council understand that the funding is meant to help children participate regularly in high quality programs, knowing that these contribute towards greater citywide goals, such as high school graduation or reduction in crime and violence. And that what they're able to try to show is by program level, strategy level, and fund level, that there is an impact. It's very difficult to prove a negative, right? To prove that through these programs, there was a reduction, there was less homicide, there was less violence. But we know as, you know, as parents, we know as raising children, that participation in these high quality programs, after school, summer programs, youth leadership programs, helps develop young people's positive development to become strong and prepared for the challenges of the world. So I do look forward to sharing this out at City Council. We'll get quorum at our January meeting and it probably bringing to council then in March 2022, which is a perfect time as we're going through the review process and they're very interested at that time in the programming.
Awesome, thank you. So if there's nothing else, thanks Michael for your presentation and thanks Mike for explaining the kind of the next steps once the committee approves. I will move us forward to agenda item 6, update on the development and release of a request for proposals for direct services for children and youth.
All right, I'll take this too. Mm-hmm. I will do a screen share myself for a PowerPoint. So bear with me a minute. There we go. You able to see the PowerPoint?
Yep.
All right. So Oakland Fund for Children and Youth, we develop a request for proposals based on the strategic investment plan. So quick overview of the process for the request for proposals for 2022-2025. This being, as I said, being developed to implement the strategic investment plan. As Sandy said, it was adopted by City Council's Life Enrichment Committee on the 15th of November. It's going to full council on the 7th of December on the consent calendar for approval. Now, the strategic plan is the guidance and the RFP is the vehicle to put out strategies and the funding. Through the RFP, there'll be $18 million approximately granted to nonprofit and government agencies. The RFP is to support direct services for Oakland children and youth ages 0 to 21. And direct services mean that the applicant applying is the agency providing those direct services. They are not a pass through to another agency than that they're managing that then does the services. It also means direct services is not curriculum development or train the trainer models, but services where children and youth are the primary recipient of the services. And for-profit businesses are not eligible to apply. As I go through this presentation, I'm trying to toggle between a couple of screens. I might not be able to see hands raised, so feel free to interject if you need to. So I said the request for proposal will implement the strategic plan. There are four main goals for OFCY, the healthy development of young children, children's success in school, youth development and violence prevention, and transitions to adulthood. And within those goal areas are 11 funding strategies. In addition, for the career awareness and employment for youth in school, it will also OFCY will continue its partnership with the Oakland Workforce Development Board and use OFCY's RFP as a joint city RFP for funding career awareness and employment support for youth in school for summer programming, for a summer specific program. Well, that's exciting for us to be able to have a joint RFP with the city and make it a little easier for applicants to not have to apply twice. The request for proposal not only will implement the 11 funding strategies, but it will really emphasize the equity framework that was developed in the strategic investment plan. That will be your, as the Planning Oversight Committee does the selection process, this will be, I guess, your guiding light as decision-making. And I pulled out these bullets straight from the strategic investment plan, some shortening, but that the strategy area will focus funding to address the needs of Black and Latinx youth and families. And that OFCUI will specifically prioritize funding for proposals that center the needs of Black, African-American youth and families who face the greatest disparities. The equity framework also prioritizes funding for specific communities of color, including Pacific Islanders and Native Americans, and directs a priority of direct services to communities in East, Central, and West Oakland for a geographical focus. The equity framework also uplifts the fund's focus on vulnerable populations, including opportunity youth not enrolled in school or employed, youth involved in foster care, children, youth experiencing homelessness, LGBTQ youth and children, newcomer immigrant children, youth and their families, children, youth with disabilities, and commercially sexually exploited children and youth. So through the RFP, OFCUI will encourage applications from three types of applicants: single agency applicants, collaborative applicants, and small and emerging applicants. So single agency applicants are, I'd say, the majority of what OFCUI receives proposals fund and funds. It's one agency applying for funding. That agency receives the majority of funds and provides the direct services. Now, single agency applicants can have subcontractors or consultants to help them do the work and implement the services. But again, the single agency applicant would be the one receiving the majority of funds and doing the majority of the work. Collaborative applicants are three or more agencies working together, and all three of them have received funding and provide direct services. And no agency in a collaboration would receive more than 60% of the total funds. And that collaborations are enhanced funding to really provide a deep investment in certain areas or communities. And the last category is small and emerging applicants. Now, this is a category that focuses on both small agencies with budgets under 500,000 and encouraging new emerging agencies, again, with budgets under 500,000. Both, this is an intentional carve out of just, as I guess, acknowledgement of programs when they apply to reduce down some of the barriers to application, and also highlight for you, the POC members, the status of these agencies. So when you're making the selection process, that you could take that into consideration to support small and emerging applicants. We are still requiring that agencies complete at least 1 year programming related to the services by the time they apply, just so there's some track record of their work in the community for what they're doing. And lastly, OSOI does encourage very small community initiatives to also apply, but using a fiscal sponsor if they do not have a 501c3 status. Also, there may be some small agencies that do have a 501c3 nonprofit status that just don't have the administrative or management capacity, and we would encourage them to look for fiscal sponsorship as well. So, timeline. This will be the process for the next 6 or 7 months of the POC. This will kind of be a theme going through until the next fiscal year. So we're looking to have City Council approve the strategic investment plan next week. And once that is authorized, OFCUI can then release a request for proposal. We have been developing it over the last month and a half, or a few months, longer than that, I should say. And our goal is to release it in early January. Those are some tentative dates right now. We would put the RFP out and have a 6-week window at least allow people that much time to be able to apply for the funds. So due date would be in mid-February. Review process takes place in March. We would request the POC form an ad hoc review subcommittee to really dig into the proposals and have some significant work sessions in April to bring quality recommendations to the POC to approve the full packet in May. I'll go over this again in a little bit. This is the overview. And just again, to highlight, we're looking to release the RFP in early January. That's the plan. So this is a little bit more detailed, similar. Just want to walk through this with the public and with the POC that we really like to clarify the process so it's not opaque for the public or the POC what the selection process will be. This will be written out in the RFP as well. But in an overview is that proposals will be received in mid-February online. OFCY does will have an online system to receive all proposals and no hard copies. If a proposal is not submitted by deadline, OFCY does not receive it and can't review it. Staff technical review comes next, where OFCY staff reviews the proposals and makes sure that everything that is supposed to be provided was provided and that it's accurate. And we reach out to agencies to clarify if there's incorrect or inaccurate information wherever possible. But if the proposals are non-compliant, they will not be reviewed. The third stage is OFCY recruits a large group of independent readers, professionals with experience in child and youth development and familiarity, a deep connection with Oakland, to review the proposals after we train them. What we would do is take an average of reader scores for proposals, have two reads for the proposals, and that the proposals with the scores of 70 or above move on to the review committee. Parallel to this is that the City of Oakland's Contracts and Compliance Division also does a review, and they may be adding on extra preference points for agencies with local Oakland workforce or years in Oakland. That is added to the score. At that point, we work with the subcommittee in April to review proposals received by each strategy. So looking at the totality received and scored and have 70 or above by each of the 11 funding strategies to have consideration. In addition to the scores, OFCY's review committee will use that equity framework we walked through. We'll look at strategic alignment and as well as past performance recommendations. The review committee will make recommendations again by strategy and bring these as one packet to the full planning and oversight committee. The recommendation for the approval will be done by the oversight committee. And again, they will have opportunity to use the equity framework and recommendations. Once a packet of new funding is developed for the $18 million, that is presented to Oakland City Council to approve the funding or reject it in its entirety. That's been the precedent from the legal, I guess the legal findings where the precedent has been that OFCY presents, the Planning Oversight Committee presents the findings and council can approve it or reject it. If it's rejected, we bring it back to the Planning Oversight Committee to look at the packet again and make a new selection and have to go back to council. So this timeline will bring us to start of new programming in June 2022 for summer programs, July 2022 for the majority, the remainder of all programs, the fiscal year. Funding is for 1 year, and it could be renewed for years 2 and 3 based on satisfactory performance. This Planning Oversight Committee will do that process the following year to review first year's performance and make a recommendation for renewal in year 2. So the application for public, and we'll have 5 sections that will be reviewed and scored. The agency history and capacity to understand more about the agency and their capacity to do the work. Section about the population geography, who will be served, where will services be, what neighborhoods and the connections to the community. The program design will be the largest section for as far as the points. That's really where the applicants describe what they will be providing and provide the details on the specific services they are proposing. There'll be staffing experience and qualifications to know who's delivering the services and the competency and qualifications of the direct service staff. And then program budget, are costs reasonable? Do they align with the program design? Is this, is it clear and enough support for the services and the impact that they want to achieve? So as applicants complete the five sections, they will also need to upload some other documents as part of the proposal. They have required city schedules. Also, it requires agency financial documents, audit for agencies, or CPA review for small and emerging. Annual budget, board of directors, proof of the IRS 501c3 letter, and letters of agreement with key partners, just to demonstrate that these are, if there's partnerships proposed, that these are real relationships and that the working details are spelled out in enough detail to demonstrate that the program would be successful. This is a summary of the three types of applicants: single agency, collaborations, and small and emerging. What we'd have in the RFP is about the minimum grant size. Looking for single agencies to have 25,000 minimum up to 250,000 as a maximum. Collaborations 100,000 minimum, 400,000 maximum, and small and emerging 25,000 minimum, 125,000 maximum grant. As you see, there's different indirect rate means how much OSUI allows agencies to use a portion of that grant award for their indirect costs, such as executive director salary or finance or administration. OSUI has always had a cap on how much money an agency could receive. It's 35% for single agencies and collaborations and up to 50% for small and emerging. So OSUI doesn't want to have the responsibility of funding 100% of one agency's total budget and being completely reliant on one single source of funds. We are looking to, you know, every agency also has been required to show that they could provide a match, that the funding from OSUI isn't the sole source supporting the program. And the 25% minimum is required. We would look that it could include in-kind resources for small and emerging to make it more open for small and emerging to apply. As I said, there's audit requirements. Also, it does require audited financial statements or proof of an audit in progress for single agencies in the lead of a collaboration. This is really a demonstration that these agencies follow generally accepted accounting principles and have systems in place that they could be good stewards of the public funds and clean accounting. For small and emerging, we know that this was too much of a burden, so the requirement is to submit a profit and loss in a balance sheet. And if the agencies are approved for funding, that they eventually complete a CPA review, which is lower than audit financial statements. Okay, I'm getting close to the end here. I'll go through. We have been working closely with Opportunity Accelerator. The city has brought in some technical assistance to help staff look at ways we could make the application reach larger group of potential applicants and to lower down the burden for applicants. And part of it is to raise the community awareness. So we've been using sessions like promoting of the strategic investment plan as ways to get the word out to the community that the RFP is coming. We don't want anyone to be surprised when the RFP does come out in January. We'd love that the word of mouth could go out to the community as much as possible and that people could be prepared as far as making partnerships and pulling together the documentation that's needed. So we've also had input sessions with providers, focus groups. We're working to update the OFCY's website, www.ofcy.org, on the RFP page, just to list resources and information, as well as share out the prior RFP. So community groups could really start preparing for this now. We hosted a contracting with Oakland workshop in partnership with the city administration office and the Department of Violence Prevention in November to help agencies understand how to navigate outside of OFCY. Just navigating how to contract with the city could be an onerous process. So look to demystify that through that workshop. And we'll be holding another one next week or next in this month, I should say. We haven't nailed down the date, with contracts compliance division as well, to help agencies. Doing presentations to other boards and commissions like the Oakland Youth Advisory Commission, Oakland Unified School District. I'll go to the Oakland Workforce Development Board in a couple of weeks. Email updates. And then once the RFP is about to be released, we do newspaper advertising, the legal ads, and we'll do it in the Oakland Post, El Mundo, and the East Bay Times to try to get the word out as much as we can. I should say, just as context, OFCY in the last two funding cycles, in 2016 and 2019, OFCY received about 250 proposals from about 100 different agencies. In both years, OFCY was able to award 150 grants based on the funding available. So the last two cycles have been much higher number of quality applications and programs that were not selected for funding, just because of the high demand and the competition and the limited funds available. Part of the equity and contracting, again, is just to make it easier for agencies to apply. So once the RFP is released, we as staff will help to provide assistance to prospective applicants in many ways. Information on the website, our contracting with Oakland workshops. Once the RFP is released, we'll hold two bidders conferences, virtual bidders conferences for all applicants to answer questions and provide overview. We'll also do two separate workshops to navigate the online application process to help people. There's going to be improved online RFP instructions within the online RFP this time. There's an online application help desk, and then we do answer technical assistance by email, and we post every response as well. So it's shared out publicly what people can have. And all this is to really try to help proposals and agencies apply and answer the questions, so it's less difficult than in prior years. One more slide on improvements, just to say to make it more equitable, equity and contracting, we've raised the limit for small and emerging from $350,000 as a cap last cycle to $500,000 as a cap. That means agencies with budgets under $500,000 will be allowed to apply without having to submit audited financial statements, and will have the ability to have higher indirect rates, as well as a larger portion of their agency's budget for OFCY funds. We're looking to really simplify how activities are projected in the RFP process, so people don't have to submit their full scope of work like they've done in prior years, but they could provide more of an overview of what their activities are, and we could then translate that into a scope of work with them once they are selected for funding. So streamlined online application process, again, improved in application help. We haven't beta tested this yet, but the application should be accessible in multiple languages via Google Translate. I'm excited about that. This year, we will be gathering data on the race and gender ethnicity of the executive director for each agency. So as a planning oversight committee, you will have that information to help in the determination on grant selection. And then overall, we've just reduced down the number of narrative questions, and we've allowed more space for applicants to apply. That is some of the feedback we heard, is to allow them more space to in the narrative to be able to share out what their program is. So again, we know applying for their funding in the city of Oakland can be difficult, and we're just trying to make this a little, as much as we can, easier in some ways. with keeping the rigor that we have. This is more of a detailed timeline that we're, you know, how we're looking at doing the RFP release, due date, our technical review, external scoring. The potential dates for subcommittee would be in early April, that we'd meet in April 21st with the full POC to hear and approve recommendations, hold an appeals subcommittee. If there's any applicants who felt like they should get funded, they could, but were not selected, they could appeal. We would need to form an ad hoc appeal subcommittee, and then bring back the results of the appeal committee to the full POC in May 18th to affirm it. And then really the parallel bringing the funding package to City Council for their approval, looking at summer programs, and the summer strategy would start June 1st and then year round start July 1. And that's it for the PowerPoint, and definitely open for questions that you may have.
Fantastic. Can we get any commissioners have questions? We have one person in the public with their hand up, but before we go to public, any commissioners? Okay. Can we take that public question, comment, Mike?
Hey, Anita,
okay. If there are questions from the public, you can raise your hand. Go ahead, Kate Lambert.
Hi, can you hear me okay?
Hi, yes.
Thanks for taking my question. I just have a question about the match requirement for applicants. For the small and emerging, I noticed it said that in-kind was acceptable. Does that mean that for any single agency or collaborative applications, it's only cash match, or is in-kind also acceptable for those applicants?
It's only cash match.
Okay, thank you.
Great question.
Yeah.
Awesome. Thanks, Kate. They probably any other questions from commissioners?
Yeah, she put salt in everything.
Comments. This was really detailed. We have one more from the public. Natasha Mejia.
Can y'all hear me? Okay, cool. I just had a quick question and wondering, I missed the first couple of slides, I think. I was wondering if, since this is being recorded, will it be posted publicly somewhere, or are the slides available?
Yeah, we will put, we put all the PowerPoint slides on the OFCY website, www.ofcy.org, under the Planning and Oversight Committee subpage. So for tonight's meeting, by tomorrow, it will be uploaded, the PowerPoint.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
Yeah. As we get the RFP out, you know, once the RFP is released, there'll be a lot of opportunities for public, again, for questions and comments through the bidders conferences and the workshops and online, through email technical assistance. And we'll be posting all the responses to our website. So many times people have similar questions, such as, you know, the cash match or whatnot. As we find that we've put the questions and answers on the website, it does help a lot of applicants just to be able to see that they've got common questions. And we use that every 3 years to try to improve the RFP so we have less questions like that.
Great. Thanks, Mike, for this detailed presentation. It really answered a lot of questions for the public, and I'm glad that it's going to be available for folks, and look forward to hearing and seeing the announcement on the information sessions and ways folks can get additional information. Thank you. You feel good with, can we move forward? Awesome. administrative matters. Are there any announcements from staff or anything about upcoming meetings? I know we talked about bringing back the that to bring back the minutes from the 27th, as well as the evaluation for approval at the next meeting. But anything else you want to remind us about?
The next meeting will be the third Wednesday of January. We won't have it that first week. It's always hard coming back out of the new year. So it'll be Wednesday, January 19th. Put on calendars. The other item would be at that meeting, I would ask you to form an ad hoc review subcommittee. And I was looking to get that earlier, but I think the January meeting would be the time to do it, is to form an ad hoc review subcommittee. As a reminder, your subcommittees could only be four members, since we have nine, can't be a quorum. The two co-chairs are ex officio members of it. The subcommittee would be extremely active in the review and selection of the programs. We look that you be leaders in that. So I'd look that you form it in January, and that the first subcommittee meeting would be in February as an orientation. And then really getting into it in March and April to have some heavy work sessions.
Okay. Thanks for giving us that preview of the next meeting. Any other announcements?
Oh. Well, one more announcement, I guess, was there's the public ethics training that Caitlin has sent out the links to the POC members. This is a requirement of the Planning Oversight Committee to each member to do these trainings and report it back to Caitlin. We have to account for this to the Public Ethics Commission that you have received it. In prior years, they would come in person and try to do these at our POC meetings. Since we've all moved virtual, they've done this at your own self-paced training. So please be sure to do this training. There's, I believe, three of them. And it's very important this cycle, especially as we're going through the process of selecting new programs and distributing $18 million out. POC members need to know to recuse themselves if they have conflicts of interest. If they work for an agency or have connections to programs, this needs to be really upfront with the public so they can have trust in the process. And also, it's important for POC members to know other ethics restrictions on their, or requirements, such as the revolving door policy of not being able to use your POC position to then gain employment with any of the groups that we're working with, that you're currying favor with them. So just put that out there. If you haven't yet done the training, this is an wonderful opportunity during the Christmas break to do so. So when we get back in January, that we hopefully have everyone trained on that. I think the last real update is that, as Sandy said at the very beginning, that Sandy Taylor has announced her, as we call it, a pre-retirement, because I know she's not retiring. She's a very active individual. I have worked for 10 years with Sandy, and I just very grateful for all that she's done for OFCY, and I'm extremely happy for her to be able to have the space away from the city to do what she wants to do as a person as well. I think it's going to be I know Oakland's a benefit for her in both roles. So I want to pass it back to you, Sandy, because just say thank you.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. It's been a wonderful pleasure to work with the staff of Oakland Fund and the commissioners. So I'm looking forward to definitely taking some time and spending time with my family. I have elderly parents. I need to get them together. No, and take care of them. And also finding other ways to just, continue doing this work. It's the work that's just dear to my heart. supporting children, youth in our outcomes and educational outcomes. And so I hope to be doing that in some other form, but we will definitely be in touch with you. So thank you guys.
Thank you so much. Any other, for Jorge and Tassian, any last words before we close out the meeting?
No, nothing particular. I apologize for my delay tonight. I had a had to go for a service, and so I really just say night, please. I really just you know, just ask them tonight to close this meeting in the memory of Jamie Jones, a Oakland native who lost her life to gun violence in the middle of a robbery gone wrong. Who lost her life in front of her young daughter. And so if we could just close this meeting tonight in her memory, an Oakland youth, you know, now adult that's lost her life tragically, that would be great.
Yeah, thank you for that. Well, thank you for centering us and reminding us of why we do this work. We do this work to give more youth and children an opportunity to thrive in our city. And we honor all of the young folks and adults who have lost their lives in this last year and prior years. I want to thank everyone in the public for coming and participating. Thank you, commissioners, for joining and staff. Grateful for your service to help us be able to do the best that we can do for Oakland youth.
Thank you for hosting.
Thank you, Pacolia. Great job. Have a wonderful night, guys.
Yeah.
Thank you, everyone. Have a good night.
All right. Bye, everyone.
Bye, everyone.